Don't miss a minute of Ruined Dits for breakfast on the Catch Up podcast. For Adelaide Tools, with 5 locations, Paraka, Lonsdale, St Mary's, Gawler and Mile End. Or go online at adelaidetools.com.au.
Oh, it's Monday morning, Roo. How are you?
Very good, thank you, Dits.
Well, very, very strange weekend again, unfortunately. Yep. London will dominate this morning. I just feel so sad and I don't know what to think, really. And how does it affect us here in little old Adelaide? You know, without getting too deep and too dramatic, I was only thinking over the weekend, Roo, that our parents went through things like a world war and a depression. And, you know, I used to sit fascinated listening to my grandparents and my parents talk about that and being a child going through war and depression. What will our kids now go through? What will the next 40 to 50 years be? I don't know. It worries the hell out of me.
Yeah, I don't know whether we'll get on top of it or not.
This is a different type of war, isn't it? And, you know, at least
unpredictable.
During a world war, they knew who the enemy was. As bad as it was, at least you knew what you were doing and where you were going. Now, walking down the street, you get your throat slit by the enemy.
I couldn't believe that yesterday when I woke up. I was up in the Riverland and someone said what had happened and I just couldn't believe it. Yeah, you know, people going around stabbing people were willy-nilly. Yeah, it's horrible stuff. Absolutely ridiculous.
Anyway, you're
doesn't
up the river.
Doesn't make any sense at all.
Yep, you're up the river, so hopefully you had a good time with the family.
Yes, had a bit of a surprise birthday for my mum up there on Saturday afternoon. So mum turned 70 this week.
70?
Yeah, big 7-0. She can retire now.
She only looks about 45, your mum.
Yeah. She still scrubs up all right.
Gee, Muzzle's batting above his weight, isn't he?
Well, he's losing a bit of weight too at the moment. Yeah. The big fella, he must think he needs to get into a bit of shape to keep her happy. But we had a good show on the weekend, so that was all good. And the footy was terrible.
Oh, yeah. We'll cover all of that off throughout the morning as well. Mick Molloy's going to join us. Hey, we've got tickets to give away. How big's this game now? Adelaide and St Kilda.
So Friday later night, on, if you must win.
Listen throughout the morning, we will have some tickets to give away to this huge clash. It's Ruined. It's off and running on this Monday morning. All thanks to Adelaide Tools, good friends of ours here, Roo. Adelaide Tools, lowest prices every day. End of financial year sale is on right now.
Ruined Dits for breakfast. 104.7 Triple M.
Making news around the place, Roo. We are obviously talking about London this morning. Channel 7 correspondent Hugh Whitfield was on our overnight program explaining the latest numbers in all of this.
48 people were taken to hospital. 21 are said to be in a critical condition. Obviously, a lot of concern about them. That includes at least one Australian who remains in St Thomas's Hospital, which is just near Westminster Bridge. The in terms of the police investigation, well, there's been a series of raids in East London today, in East Ham, and also in Barking. A number of the neighbours nearby there have been telling local media that they know the bloke. They know him to be a good neighbour who was chatty and never really raised any alarm at all.
Tell me, the I Love Manchester concert. One Love Manchester concert. It's underway.
Some people obviously a little bit cautious about the whole situation there tonight. It was always going to be a massive job for security officials in Manchester.
Hugh Whitfield from Channel 7. So that was our overnight program on Triple M.
They know the bloke. He was a normal bloke. And that all stuff just makes it scarier again, doesn't it? A
couple of things to talk about, Roo. And we will throughout the morning. Police arrived in 8 minutes and just went bang and shot dead three fellas, right? Now, you know, we compare this to the Lint Cafe situation where our police have been slammed for the way they handled it.
Yep.
I don't think we're equipped in this country. And it came out in the Lint Cafe. And I don't blame police at all. I said to you at the time, I mean, we haven't been faced with this. So how do you know how to react and what to do? In London, I think they're more equipped. They know about terrorism. They've dealt with it for years and years and years. Police just walked in and shot three blokes dead. That was it.
Yeah, I think things would change too if it happened tomorrow in Australia now. I think they, you know, out of that Lint Cafe thing, the one thing everyone kept saying is everyone's got to learn from this. And they say that in every terror attack anywhere in the world, everyone learns from it. I think people will see, or Australia will see, how they handled it in London. And they'll change their tactics because they have to, because it's you're dealing with a different person who's prepared to do different things to a normal drug addicted bloke or an armed robber or someone. These blokes are just different.
Yeah, Roo, we've heard about suicide bombers over the years, but what about how they how they committed these crimes, these atrocities, driving a car into people.
Yep.
And the other one is just randomly walking up to people and stabbing them.
Yeah.
The young lady from Brisbane, who's in hospital at the moment, critical, a fellow walked up behind her, grabbed her hair, pulled her head backwards and slit her throat.
Yeah, it's just ridiculous.
Can you believe that?
No, it's, well, I can, but it just shows how crazy they are.
So I am concerned because I think we know these people live in our society. They've infiltrated us everywhere in every city in the world. We know a girl got arrested here in Adelaide last week. And I'm not being dramatic. I'm actually just being quite forthright and honest here. This is how I feel about it. There'll be copycat things like this happen all over the world now.
Well,
so if it happened in Adelaide tomorrow, I'd like to ask the question this morning, and we're going to try and get our police minister on. Are our police equipped? Are they trained? Do they talk about these things daily, weekly? Do they have training sessions? How equipped are we? Or are we actually saying, oh, we don't expect this would ever happen in Adelaide?
There's no way they could be saying that. Even if they don't think it's going to happen, there's still a chance of it happening, and they need to be training and be prepared for it.
I'd like to know.
I'd be absolutely shocked if they're not discussing that and planning full-on training sessions. It'd have to be front of mind and just move everything else to the side and get everyone in Australia equipped to be able to handle it as good as anyone in the world. Most things we do, we're as good as anyone in the world. Let's get prepared and organised just in case.
If you live in Sydney and you went to the Lint Cafe every morning to get your coffee on the way to work, I bet you never ever thought you'd be in that situation.
Yeah.
And if you were in the mall in Melbourne and that fella drove his car down the mall recently, you would have thought that never ever ever happened in our lifetime in Melbourne.
Yep. No, I'd bet my life on it. I'd reckon they'd have to be getting organised for that.
All right. Well, I'm keen to know. By the way, I told you the last weekend I went to the footy here as a punter for the first time. Like, in other words, I wasn't there commentating and up in the safety of the media area. So I went, just walked straight through. So they talk about the new measures at the Adelaide Oval. Yep. How far are these measures going to go? Because no one checked me. I wasn't searched. No one asked me anything. I walked straight through.
Yep. As opposed to when you go into a pub at Arndorf, they do search you.
That's right. And refuse me entry.
You're not coming in, Dits.
Correct. That's
right.
You're
not coming in.
Now, let's move on, Roo, to something else. And this will affect us all as well. They reckon we're going to work till we're 70 now.
Unbelievable. Well, it's we're going to try and speak to an expert later. But if that's just a budget saving, Dits, that's unfair. I mean, there's a bit of a, surely there's a, I don't know, a community sort of, I don't know, lifestyle thingy. It's not just about money.
We can't just work all our lives. I mean, most people don't make it past 70. Look at that. No, but do the stats on who lives past 70.
Absolutely.
And there's a lot of the population that doesn't. No. You deserve a bit of free time at the end.
Bloody hell, you're going to smell the roses for a while.
I would have thought.
Yeah, it's a tough call. I'm not convinced about it either. But like, if you want to, absolutely. If you're fit and healthy enough, absolutely. Shows where we're at financially, doesn't it? When we keep pushing it back, we only pushed it back only a couple of years ago, didn't we?
But I just wonder if. I want to know what the laws are. Let's say that anyone listening out there is real diligent with their super and they've saved and saved, and when they get to 60, they go, well, I've got enough super. I've got $1 million. I'm going to retire. And I wonder if you're allowed to.
Yeah, well, you should be able to. You should be able to bring it forward a little
bit. I suppose 70 is just to do with the pension, isn't it? That's what they'd be saying.
Maybe, yeah.
As a government, they'd be saying, well, yeah, if you've. Anyway, these are the rules we'll find out.
Yep.
Roo, I just need to bring up quickly Friday night. What happened to your mob?
Pathetic.
Righto, let's move on. That's Roo's take on the footy. It's ruined it. Yeah, that's what's making news around the place. A top of 18 today. They reckon afternoon showers. At the moment, it's 5, and God, it was chilly again this morning.
Ruined Dits for breakfast on 104.7 Triple M.
6:21, Ruined Dits. Let's head to London right now, Roo, our UK correspondent, Gavin Gray. Gavin, thanks for taking our call. What have we learnt in the last 12 hours or so? We believe there's been quite a few arrests.
Yes, there have. Good morning to you both. There have been 12 people arrested in Barking. Now, that's in East London. And an apartment there has been raided. It was said there was a controlled explosion there. The apartment that's been raided is thought to be a flat belonging to one of the three attackers. Now, among the 12 arrested are people that were said to be there. And among the 12 are four women. It's been reported but not confirmed that of the three attackers, one of them was married with two children. So that's the latest from the police. We still know that 36 people are in hospital, 5 London hospitals with a range of injuries, 21 are in a critical condition. And, of course, that is deeply worrying. We've also been told, Roundheads, that 50 bullets were fired by the police, and they managed to stop the attackers within 8 or 9 minutes of the first call. But 50 bullets, unprecedented in peacetime here in the UK. And sadly, one of those stray bullets hit a member of the public. We don't know their condition, but they are injured and in hospital at the moment.
What were the women arrested for?
Well, good question. We don't know at the moment. That this is all in connection with this particular address, and that address was one that was owned by one of the three attackers. They were wearing mock suicide explosive vests, and that's why some people were reluctant to tackle them. But there's been the most amazing stories of heroism, people throwing chairs at them, glasses at them in order to try and prevent them, people stepping in as they were stabbing people. And the most, you know, horrendous eyewitness accounts. We do know, unconfirmed here in the UK, but certainly being reported by the international media, two Australians are among those that were injured. A woman called Candice Hedge, who was stabbed in the throat while sitting at one of the bars, and also a man called Andrew Morrison. Don't know any further details about him. We believe one of the dead is a Canadian. That's come from Canadian media. And also there was a New Zealander who was stabbed several times along with his girlfriend, who was French, again in a bar. I'm afraid this, as some are describing, these new low-tech attacks, in other words, using something like a van and then a knife, would appear to be almost a new norm. This is the third attack in 3 months.
What's it done to Londoners, Gavin? As Brits, have lived with terrorism, I think, longer than probably most nations in the world. You're more accustomed to these sorts of things. Has it changed the way people travel, like when you have to get the train, you know, tomorrow morning to go to work, or the underground? What will happen? Will there be just police and army everywhere? How have things changed?
Yeah, certainly I think we're seeing a lot greater police presence. The army who were on the streets were taken off when we went back down to severe as the terror threat level rather than critical. Now, at the moment, we're waiting to hear what's going to happen to that. The Prime Minister said enough is enough. And she said we need to tackle more concertedly extremism. But we don't know yet what that means, exactly what steps she's willing to take in. Mm. You know, if you're a commuter and you've got to travel in, you travel in. I really think what it's going to hit, sadly, is tourism, people just going on day trips into London, and perhaps also those after work thinking, shall I go for a drink? Not so sure.
Yeah.
I hope that doesn't happen. But, you know, we've said things like this before. The truth about it is there are some complete madmen out there who think that this is the way forward.
And, Gavin, the concert went ahead in Manchester, and it's been a huge success by the look of it.
Yes. They're hoping to raise £2 million, roughly $3.4 million Australian dollars. I think they'll raise much more than that. They have had a great time, reasonable weather, summer here, of course, great acts, hugely well supported, and a great deal of outpouring. And of course, what was supposed to be a Manchester event turned into more of a sort of a UK event because of this attack now in London. So I think many people who, one or two critical of Ariana Grande leaving the UK so soon after the actual attack, very much had to eat their words. She's been extremely, I'm told, instrumental in organizing this concert. And lots of people wanted to join in, take that, Coldplay, Justin Bieber among them, to actually, you know, say we are part of this movement too. And it sounds very 60s, 1960s, doesn't it? Peace and love, not war and hate. But that is very much the message coming out.
And she did a terrific job yesterday. I saw her at the hospital with all of the kids. She had photos with all of them. And talking about the emotion, I see where Robbie Williams broke down on stage, Gavin, as well, while he was singing. So there is a lot of feeling in Manchester. And they tell me, I haven't seen it yet, but they say the minute silence at the start of the concert was eerie. You just couldn't hear a pin drop.
So,
yeah, amazing. Gavin, thanks for talking to us.
Cheers, guys.
Gavin Gray, our UK correspondent. All of this frightening, Roo. I said at the start of our program this morning, I don't know, our parents went through wars and depressions and things. We now are fighting this war that we don't even know about. People in the streets, that, you know, you can look them in the eye and you think, you're on my side or are you on the other side?
Doesn't do much for community spirit,
does it? It's just crazy, isn't it? It really is. You worry about, you know, yeah, how do our kids grow up in the next 30, 40, 50 years living in this sort of society? It's bloody terrible. It really is. It's ruined. It's here on Triple M.
Triple M.
Let's go to Melbourne and say good morning to a very, very happy man this morning, Mick Malloy.
Mick.
We're trying to keep a lid on it. You know what? Down at Tigerland. Do you know what, you know what annoys me most about the draw this year? Is that all teams playing finals get that week off before finals. And it's not fair on us top four sides, to me. Because it gives those sides down the bottom end of the eight a chance to recover. And I mean, and we've earned that right, don't you think? That double chance.
Absolutely.
Have you got the ladder in front of you? I think you'll find it.
Sitting in fourth.
You know how good it is to be in the first round of the bye and get the 4 points? It's like winning on a Friday night, except you're out in front. So the Tigers are just out in front. Brilliant. I can't wait.
You've been working on this top four thing for 30 years. I think you deserve a bit of a break, don't you?
Well, we'll be hard to move now. Yeah. This could be the start of a dynasty.
I've got some bad news for you. It's all about to fall apart. Because your star, Dusty Martin, has flown out to go and see his dad in New Zealand. That's the end of that. That's the end of your year.
Do you know what all I've got in my mind when you say that is one of those houses like in Once Were Warriors?
Yeah, that's what I was just thinking of.
Because they'll have a quiet week together, won't they?
No, they won't. It's going to be a father-son, like a... Cats in the Cradle style.
Just go do some sightseeing and stuff like that.
Stop it! We'll be fine.
Dad, I want to see the cultural sights of New Zealand. He's after a couple
of
museums.
Explain to me this, guys. How can Essendon afford to pay $1.6 million a year for a player? What? How does that happen? Can you explain to me how in the modern day that can happen? Now, they've retained all their players, have they not? Yes, Essendon.
Yeah.
And have they not? Have they paid any out-of-court settlements? Have they for settled civil cases
million,
with their players? Does that money come out of a salary cap? Does it?
No.
Well, should it? Pay all your players, retain all your players, and pay them money outside of the salary cap, and afford to pay $1.6 million a year to crowbar a player out of another club,
no, that's
and
cool.
You're supposed to have been punished for your behaviour.
Those payments.
Terms. Does that seem fine to you?
Those
Does that
payments,
seem like a great finish to this discussion?
They were called victims of crime, those payments.
but okay, well, so you can pay whatever you want, can't you?
Yeah.
Here's $2 million, don't leave. Oh, don't worry, it doesn't come out of the salary cap.
Oh, we struck a nerve here, haven't we? A raw nerve.
Got a bit quiet, have we, boys?
Now you know what it's like when the crows watch Dangerfield rivers up every time. Oh, free agency. I knew you'd like it, Mick.
Right, hey, now, Mick, we've just seen on the TV screens here, we saw an ad break, you going down the slide for the motor neuron disease. This is the Neil Danaher thing a couple
That's
of years
right.
ago.
Neil and Danaher,
they're doing it this weekend.
They're doing it this weekend. I think it's the third year. I was in the first year.
Of course you
slider.
Were.
You'll see me coming down those bumblebee speedos.
You emptied the pool.
Stolen. Hey, empty the pool. I was lucky that Nissan Maru wasn't there. I would have been harpooned. All I did was put my hand up and said, please put me in before Mark Robinson. I don't want to go into that oily water. Hey,
who's going this week? I saw Leighton Hewitt's
well,
been
sportsmen.
Nominated.
It's all sportsmen this week. So it was Leighton Hewitt,
Lisa
Steve Hooker, I think Elisa Camplin. So I'm trying to work out who it might be. Who do you think go down? The criteria is they've got to have played for Australia. They've got to be a sportsman.
Bernard Tomic.
Well, if they put a couple of strippers in the tub.
What about Booney?
He'd slide down.
What about Booney? Get Booney up there.
Right. Booney.
Warney.
Booney in the lolly bags and the big handlebar mo with a tinny in one hand.
Yes.
What about Warney?
When he's whites with a ciggy in one hand, that'd be good.
Yeah. My what nomination, Margaret Court.
that get the top.
Would make the water even colder than it is before she got in there.
What about John Howard or Kevin Rudd or someone like that?
I said sportsman.
Sportsman.
Didn't you see John Howard bowl that leggy that day?
Grant Hackett?
Yeah,
he could do that.
Grant Hackett.
Benny Cousins?
Aussie Joe Bugner?
Get Benny out for the day? You could do that.
Benny Cousins. Maybe that Mick Fanning, you put a shark in
it. Put a shark in there.
Benny's already in the cooler.
Did you ever play for Australia?
Yes.
Oh,
embarrassing.
Of course he did. Oh. He played for the world.
That slippery dip doesn't look wide enough. I get so stuck halfway. It'd be embarrassing.
You'll come down covered in chicken fat like Des Redford.
That's right.
Taking no chances. Did you ever play for Australia, Roo, in any of these
International rules a couple of times over there in
the
Ireland?
Junket, the junkets, they call
maybe you could come down on a flying fox and it.
Well, I could do that. No, I look forward to getting over there, Mick. All right, mate.
It's
all
a
right.
Big day at the G. The Tigers are on fire.
Enjoy your week
good.
Off.
I love Monday. Going to read all the papers and watch all the footy shows tonight.
Will Dusty win the Brownlow?
If he stays at Richmond, he probably will.
if he comes back from New Zealand.
Yes, he will.
All right. Good on you, Mick. We'll talk Thursday.
On you, boys.
See you, Mick Malloy. He joins us every Monday, every Thursday morning.
Ruined Dits for breakfast. 104.7 Triple M.
Roo, tell us all about Friday night.
Well, it was a very frustrating night for Crows fans watching it wherever you were, whether you're at the game or watching in front of the TV. It was very, very frustrating. I nearly smashed the TV up at Wakery a few times watching it up there. But they just looked soft up there.
Soft?
They looked soft, and they were soft. And that's why they got beaten in contestable 164 to 130.
Clearly tonight, overall, the contested possession numbers didn't lie, and the uncontested didn't either. So we were down nearly 100 possessions and, you know, 35 odd, you know, contested possessions. So it's always going to be hard to win games of footy with that.
They're out-muscled, and when the Crows get beaten in that area, their whole game falls down. They need to toughen up in that midfield area. Otherwise, so many players don't come into calculations. Cameron, Atkins, McKay, Miller, they don't get the ball if the midfield aren't winning it, and then the ball doesn't get moved properly to the forward line, who look like they struggle when the ball's not moved fast enough. They tend to need a bit more space, a lot of the Crows forwards. So, and the opposition are working out if they can win in that contested ball in the middle of the ground, and they can restrict the ball movement from Laird and Smith down back, who had quiet nights as well. Then the ball doesn't get down to that dangerous forward line, and then they can't weave their magic. So it's a bit of a snowball effect, but it all gets down to the toughness around the ball. And there's a common theme when Adelaide get beaten, they get beaten in that midfield part of the ground, whether it's tagging Rory Sloane or whether the other midfielders can't step up and do enough damage. That's what happens. They get done.
Roo, have you ever thought about the science of travelling and playing away? Why is it that sport all over the world, we always say, oh, we're playing away. It's going to be harder playing away. Why? You know, Malcolm Blight, the famous quote, well, it's an oval with goalposts at either end. Why does it change so much? Everyone will say to you, oh, it's hard to win down at Geelong. Have you thought about this or not?
Well, it doesn't really worry me. I know there's, you got a better advantage at home than away because you know the oval more. And the Skilled Stadium oval is a narrower oval, so it is just different playing down there. But Adelaide's issue is not playing home and away. They played a shocking game against Melbourne. So I don't think that's the reason why they lost. The reason why they lost is they weren't hard enough around the ball, and Geelong played a better game of football. They were tougher. They played it smarter. They used the ball better. Obviously, Dangerfield and Selwood played cracking games. I think the club will look at whether, you know, perhaps they should have shut them down a bit more, a bit earlier. Because, you know, when they play well, Geelong always win.
Now, you mentioned the midfield earlier, right, at the start of this. Now, pre-season, a lot of the scribes interstate question Adelaide's midfield. And then all of a sudden, you know, four or five rounds in, people say, no, the midfield's very, very good. So where is it at?
Well, they need to get it done in big games, I would say. With Rory Sloane, you got the Crouch brothers. Richard Douglas had a quiet game on the weekend as well. So if you got Sloane tag, Douglas down, the Crouch brother, Matt Crouch played, I think he was okay. Brad Crouch got a fair bit of the ball but didn't do a lot with it. But then Cameron had a quiet night, Atkins had a quiet night, McKay had a quiet night, Miller had a quiet night. I think what Don Pike will say is, how are we going to win a game if half the side has a quiet night? Mm. And a lot of the midfield had quiet nights. You can't do it. And as I said before, Laird and Smith didn't do much either. So they had so many players that just didn't get the job done. You can't win a game of footy like that. Mm. So, well, he needs to find out whether that's game style, whether it's in the minds of these players that they didn't play well, whether it was coincidence, whether they got stage fright on a, you know, in a big game or not, because it was built up as a Well, I said it was a season-defining game for them. If they won that game, a lot of people would have taken them fairly seriously for the flag. But I heard Bruce McAvaney, he was pretty ruthless on what he thought of the Crows. It was a big step backwards for them. So, and a lot of frustrated supporters out there, and quite rightly they should be, because they want the Crows to be better than what they were on Friday night.
Mm.
Having said all that, they're still equal on top of the ladder.
That's right. Hey, Roo, just quickly as well, this question about tagging has come up again. The tagging's gone out of the game. No coincidence, the week before, Dangerfield, Selwood, best two players against Port Adelaide, best two players against the Crows this week, and yet go back, three or four weeks ago, opposition tagged them out of the game and Geelong didn't win.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting what some coaches decide to do and what they don't. I think they look like from the TV, and it is hard to work out what's going on the TV, that looked like Brad Crouch was on Dangerfield and at the start of the game. Didn't look like there was anyone in particular on Selwood. It would have been probably one of the Crouch boys or Douglas. Looked like then Luke Brown might have went on to Selwood halfway through the first quarter, but Selwood had 21 or 23 touches at half time.
Mm.
I reckon the damage was done by then a bit. And Dangerfield had a good day out, whether he's in the midfield or forward. So they play him again in 6 weeks. It'll be interesting to see if they do anything different, because that's three bad beatings in a row from the Geelong towards Adelaide.
Mm. All right, good on you, Roo. All is not lost. Keep your chin up.
I'll keep the chin up.
Yeah, it's Roo and Dits here on Triple M.
Roo and Dits for breakfast on 104.7 Triple M.
7:31, Roo and Dits on this Monday morning, thanks to Adelaide Tools. Lowest prices every day. Go online at adelaidetools.com.au. Time now for our Monday phone-in on 133 53. Let's get to our first call. Hello, good morning.
Oh, you good day, Roo. Good day, Dits.
Who's
How
that?
You doing? It's Murray on the Murray.
G'day, hey, Murray. How are you? Roo was up your way on the weekend.
Yeah, I heard you up here. I heard your mother had her 70th birthday, Roo. Some of the boys up the pub were talking about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was a good time,
did you? Yeah, it did. Thanks, Murray. Yeah.
Yeah.
Didn't you get the invite?
Nah, mate. Look, where'd you go? You weren't up near Berry, were you?
Not far from Berry.
It's bloody cold, wasn't it?
Mm, frosty up there at the moment.
Anyway, the boys were just saying, you know, it hasn't been a funny season when you get all the favourites that come out and they don't win. Why is that happening? Mm. Imagine how much you'd have won if you just bet the team that wasn't the favourite.
Yeah. Right.
Imagine that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you see it?
Good strategy. I can.
Anyway, I'm not ringing up for an argument, but just wanted to say that the boys at the bar have come up with an idea. Did you see that female goal umpire that was umpiring the game yesterday?
Yeah.
Another female. How many have they got now?
Yeah, quite
a
few.
How many female? Yeah, quite. You know, we've come with this idea, right? You know how they don't actually make their decisions themselves, right? So what happens, they make a decision, then they review it, and if it's wrong, they say, oh, sorry about that. So.
Right.
You don't have to get it right, do you?
No. Anyone could do it.
So why not have female, not ringing up for an argument, we have female celebrity umpires.
All right.
I imagine the crowd down at if Chappelle's umpiring.
Right.
You get the female in the news, and then next week, you know, Rebel Wilson's down the other end.
Right. Yeah.
Anyway, it's just an idea.
That's not bad.
No, I like it.
Might boost some of the crowds at Gold Coast games, get Chappelle doing that.
GWS, yeah. All right. Thanks, Murray. Let's go to our next caller. Hello, good morning.
Hello, Christopher.
Who's that?
It's your mother.
Oh, God, yes, Mum. It's Vera.
You know how old I am?
So, yeah, you're in your 80s, yeah.
Thank you. You remember when I turned 70, Christopher?
Yeah.
You didn't have a surprise party for me.
No, I didn't. No, that's right. No. But Roo did on the weekend, Mum, I know. Sorry about that. Maybe for your next birthday.
How many Port games have you gone to, son? How many have you seen them play this year?
I've been to all of them.
Everyone.
And have you been working at every one of you?
Last week I didn't work. No, I just went with my friends.
And that's the first time?
Yeah.
You're working and you're meant to be a Port supporter and you get down there. What were you drinking, Christopher?
I drank water.
That's a disgrace.
Gee whiz, Mum.
You should know better than that.
Sorry.
I grew you up to get down the boys with the Port and enjoy yourself.
Yeah, I know.
You're unbiased in your commentary. You don't.
He's lost it.
Christopher. I don't know what I've done wrong.
Sorry. Right. Yeah, I didn't realise I had a Scottish mum either. Anyway, let's get
Thanks,
Vera. We got time for one. That was Vera, my mum. Time for one more call. Hello.
Hey, good, boys.
Oh, who's that?
Yeah, Tex.
Hey, Tex.
Tex.
How are you, mate? Yeah.
KG.
He's gone hard, hasn't he?
KG.
Yeah, good on him.
Yeah.
How do you reckon I'd have gone against KG?
What do you mean?
You know, one-on-one in today's game.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. You'd go right.
Yeah. Have you seen the ladder?
Yeah.
First time boys were off the top.
Yep. What are you going to do about it?
Well, I've said to the boys, I've got a big whiteboard. And who's on the top? GWS, right?
Yeah.
And you got us. And then you got Geelong.
Yep.
You get the first letter in that order. You know what that spells?
What?
Gag.
Yeah. It's a joke.
Right. Oh, no.
Right.
Anyway, this bloke, he's run this bonsai shop. He sells bonsais.
Right.
He's been so successful, he's moved to a smaller premises.
Right. Thanks, Tex. Right, we'll see you tomorrow when you come in, Tex. Hope you feel
King 10 this week, Tex.
Righto.
Yeah,
there you go.
KG.
That's our Monday phone in for in the light of what happened in Manchester and in London overnight. It has got me questioning little old Adelaide. Are we equipped here? What if something happens? What if the Lindt Cafe siege was to happen here? And I do fear about this, that there are Islamic cells everywhere right around the world. There are pockets of people living who are training with this stuff online. We know that some of them fly overseas and get training, and they are infiltrating our societies right now.
Yep.
And I'm not trying to be dramatic. I'm actually being quite serious about this. And I just wondered, if something was to happen in Adelaide, how equipped are we? Do you know that even back 30 years ago, if you sat on a train in London or New York or somewhere, they were aware of terrorism even back then. You know, if you had your bag and you put it down on a train, someone would say, whose bag is that? Is that your bag, mate? Don't, you know, make sure you don't leave it sitting there. Because they were really paranoid even back then. We're nowhere near that yet. And I just wonder how equipped we are. I thought we'd speak to our police minister this morning, Peter Malinauskas. Peter, good morning.
Good morning, Dits. Good morning, Roo.
Hey, Pete.
Peter, have you had these types of discussions? And maybe I'm naive here. Maybe you have been doing this for years. But I'm talking about our star force, our police force, and you, the government. You know, do you constantly talk about these situations?
Absolutely, on a regular basis. So we have an emergency management committee of cabinet, and within that committee, we have the responsibility for all emergency action plans that exist throughout the state for a whole range of different emergencies. And terrorism is one that naturally gets regularly discussed, particularly in light of the fact that we are operating in a different climate to what was the case 20 years ago. And currently in Australia, we do have a national terrorism threat level of probable. So that means we have to be vigilant and prepared. And we've got to contemplate every circumstance. And that's hard work, but it's necessary work just in case something does go wrong.
And look, Peter, please understand, I'm not asking these questions to try and be critical of anyone here. I just think it's good peace of mind that we know that these things are in place. One thing we learnt out of the Lindt Cafe siege, or we learnt many, many things, but mistakes were made. And yet I don't knock the police at all, because if you've never been in that situation, how would you know how to react? But overnight, we know that in London, they just shot the three terrorists point blank. They just came in and with 8 minutes, they were shot. We know that in Sydney, the police waited many, many hours before they stormed the building. That was one thing. But the other thing that came up is that the chief negotiator for the police in Sydney had never actually done that job before. I worry about those sorts of things and about that sort of inexperience here in Australia.
Well, look, our police officers are trained to deal with a whole range of different circumstances. And thankfully, Lindt Cafe sieges don't happen very often. So it's hard for someone to be able to claim experience
within
a situation when they occur so irregularly. What's critical is they train for every circumstance. I'm in Kangaroo Island at the moment for Country Cabinet.
Yep.
And on the way over, the question went through the mind, well, what is our preparations in the event that something goes wrong on SeaLink? I wonder if SAPOL have preparations for that. And you wouldn't believe it. In December last year, SAPOL conducted a substantial exercise to contemplate how do they deal with something going wrong on the SeaLink. And it gave me enormous peace of mind, because our security forces are out there working with other federal government agencies, contemplating every single circumstance, everything that could go wrong. They've got an action plan in place for almost any problem. So I think we can take a lot of confidence that they're prepared and trained. to deal with whatever circumstance may arise.
So all the police are trained. Do you have a you know, the star force? Are they at another level with the terrorist activities as well, Peter?
Absolutely. Our star is, I've gone out and watched our star is trained. I've got to say it's a sight to behold. These are elite men and women at the ready for any problem that may arise, and they have a particularly unique set of skills that can be used in a counter-terrorism situation. But it's interesting to know, fellas, that in London, the everyday copper doesn't actually have an armed gun on them. They're not all armed. Only a select number of bobbies over there are armed, whereas our police here in South Australia are all armed and trained to be able to use that firearm in a situation that threatens life.
What's the reason why they don't over there?
That's a question for them. I was trying to get my head around it myself yesterday, talking to our Deputy Police Commissioner. I just don't think the public, when the debates were being happened a number of years ago, didn't particularly like the idea. Whereas I think here in South Australia, we're comfortable with the fact that all our police officers are armed, provided, of course, the public know that they've got the appropriate firearms training with it. And we've got that, and we don't see those firearms used unless it's the most extreme circumstances where there is a threat to life.
All right, Peter, thank you. And that does give us a bit of peace of mind to know that you are on top of this on a regular basis. So thank you.
Thanks, fellas.
Enjoy KI.
Yeah.
Yeah, will do. Cold.
Peter Malinauskas is our Minister for Police.
What do you think there, Dids?
No, I probably answered the question. You know, I heard what I wanted to hear, that they do meet regularly about it and that he's very confident we are equipped. And gee, knowing what our staries are like, I would be surprised if they couldn't handle any situation.
Well, they'd love looking forward to it, I reckon.
Yeah.
They'd be trained to the minute. Our staries, they always say they're fantastic at what they do.
No doubt.
Ruined Dits for Breakfast. 104.7 Triple M.
Ru, in a moment, a bit of a recap on the London situation. Earlier this morning, Julia Bishop made a big statement, and also we spoke to our own police minister, Peter Malinauskas. We'll recap on that in just a moment. But tell us about your weekend, Ru. You went up to Wakery.
Yeah, had a bit of a trip up there. Had a surprise party for my mum. She turned 70 this week, so we just said we're going out to the pub for lunch with the immediate family. And when we got there, she had about 60 family and friends there, so that was all good. Got a few tears because she had
surprise.
A sister from Queensland, best friend from Queensland, and people from all over the joint. So, yeah, we had a great day at the Wakery pub. They did an awesome job there, and, a lot of laughs and a lot of fun, a few old photos and old videos. And
so did you make
right
a speech?
Today. Oh, we all had a bit of a chat and Sarah put a PowerPoint presentation together with the old photos and videos and all that stuff. So it was good. We had a few drinks.
How did your mum end up marrying old Muzz, the godfather?
I don't know. She was born in Blackwood and they moved up there when she was about 10 or 12 or something. And then ran into old Muzz around the traps and started going out with the little Italian fella. She was about 6 inches taller then. Because all her side of the family are all 6'3" and 6'2", and mum's about 5'11", and dad never grew, and he was first ruck in year 7 at primary school, and the big, strong Italian always go through puberty before everyone else, and then he never grew after that and ended up being a back pocketer.
So he's still in the grade 7 team.
He's still in the grade 7 team. So, it was a lot of fun, and we had a good weekend. So, a bit of fun. Surprise parties are always good.
So the Ricciuto's hit the local pub in Wakery. Nah, is it still standing?
No, it was all good. Very good day, and a good pub up there. And, it was cold up there, though. If you reckon it's cold in Adelaide, head out up there. It was -5 Friday night up that way. Ooh. So we were all in the caravan in Rackham, Stackham and Packham. And, we all had little red noses and a bit cold, but all good. We all survived.
All right. Well done. And well done. Happy birthday, Mrs.
Happy birthday,
Mrs.
Carol,
Ricciuto.
On this Thursday. Carol.
Ruined Dits for Breakfast. 104.7 Triple M.
104.7 Ruined Dits for Breakfast here on Triple M. They reckon now we've got to wait until we're 70 to retire. kidding.
I'm going to be a bit earlier than that, hopefully, Dits. Yeah. You only got a couple of years to go.
Yeah. I need to know more about this. The Barefoot Investor joins us, Scott Pape. Good morning, Scotty.
Good morning, guys.
Right, what are the rules surrounding this? Does it mean, surely if I want to retire 55 or 60, I can do that and get my super, can't I, or not?
You can. You've just, I guess what is happening for me is When the pension first came in, so get this, I just want to give you some context here. Yep. In 1909, when the first pension was offered, right, the retirement age was 65.
Mm-hmm.
But most people were dead by then, right? So the average life expectancy was about 58. So nowadays, we're living till we're older, till we're 82, but we're still trying to retire at the same age. Now, you can retire, depending, you can access your age pension at age 65, but that's actually increasing. It'll be 65 and a half in July, and then it'll go in stages till you're 67, and then on to 70 if it actually gets passed. Now, these are still part of the zombie reforms, but I guess the thing that I'm saying here is we're living longer in retirement, so we're going to have to push it a bit further. Of course, not the politicians.
No.
So it's purely, I kind of think it makes sense. You know, we're living longer, and you know, twice as many people are over the age of 65. It's the fastest growing demographic. You know, we're all going to have to work a bit longer.
So you said you couldn't access that money until you're 65. That's right, Scott.
You can't get your age pension until you're 65. It'll be 65 and a half from July. So they're, effectively what the government is doing is they're pushing it out that you can't access the age pension until, well, they're going to try and get it until you're 70. And I think it will keep increasing as life expectancy, you know, hopefully we all live till we're 100. It's going to get more and more because the government simply can't afford it.
So they're saying, so is it a saving of about $2.5 billion per year? Is that correct?
$3.5 billion is the figures that I've seen. But, right, you know, and that doesn't count the income tax that people will pay as they work longer. The thing that I would say to anyone who's listening is that the majority of people don't have enough money to retire. They've got to keep working. And I actually think that's not a bad thing. Now, hear me out, because I know everyone will be groaning here. The two most dangerous years of your life are the year you're born and the year you retire. You know,
really?
If you retire and you stop working, I think everybody should be putting in at least a day a week, you know, just to keep the old grey matter going, so you're contributing, so you're getting out, getting away from the life, you're getting it, doing some work. You know, and the government is actually trying to encourage people to do that. You can earn $6,500 a year before it affects your pension and before you pay any tax. So I still think that even if you do have enough money socked away in retirement, you should, easy for a young bloke to say, but you should actually be working at least one day a week just to keep yourself, you know, connected and enjoying life.
Right, so I've just
For politicians,
I've got good news.
They can retire.
Yeah. Oh yeah, and with benefits, I've got good news for everyone this morning, where you and I will be doing breakfast radio when we're 70. So to all our listeners out there, we're still here for another 30 years. Yeah,
right. We'll be dribbling by then.
That's right. Hey Scott, thanks for joining us, mate.
Thanks, guys.
There you go, Scott Pate, barefoot investor.
Oh, Dits will be working to 70. Yeah, let's throw open the lines. What do people think about that? 1-3-3-5-3. You happy with the age going up to 70? Are you annoyed? I'm sure there'll be a few people at the age of 65 or around there that wouldn't be too happy about it. They just plan their retirement. We've got some footy tickets to give away too, Dits.
Surely we're not here just to work our entire lives, are we?
Well, if you go back to the 1909, you know, back when it first came in, it was 65. They had hardly any time then. Mm. Well, you were dead then, and you retired a bit just before that. So it does make sense what he's saying, but it'd be good if you could have a few holidays and smell the roses a bit, wouldn't it?
Yeah, all right. Now, we've got a double to go and see the Crows St Kilda this Friday night. What a big game this is. You can get your tickets now at afc.com.au, but 1-3-3-5-3, best caller, we've got a double to go and see the Crows St Kilda.
104.7 Triple M.
7:54, the government wants us to work until we're 70 now. Retirement age at 70.
Yeah, getting a bit older. Let's go to St. Clair. Barney, what do you think about it?
Yeah, look, probably be fair, mate. I'll probably have to work till I'm 75. I'm 51 at the moment. So, but there is a medical reason why people in that danger period, the first year they retire. A friend of mine retired, had a massive heart attack at 70, I think it was, and went back to work. What happens is when you retire, you're blood thickens because you're sitting down and your blood's not pumping, and it clots.
Oh.
And that's when you get the blood clot, it goes to the artery and you have a heart attack. So that's why it's a danger period. I agree with that guy that, you know, one day a week you get the blood pumping, and that's why you should go out and play golf or do whatever when you retire and not sit on your arse.
Mm. All right. Thanks, Barney. Righto.
Thanks for that advice. Good advice. Let's go to Waverly. G'day, Tazzo.
G'day,
G'day, how are you?
Good, thanks, buddy.
Mate, look, I'm a bit annoyed that we've got a government that's going to legislate for the rest of the Australian population that's not going to actually apply to them. So we've got people who want to make, you know, factory workers and labourers work until they're 70. The average sitting days for the Senate are 50 days a year, and the House of Reps sit for 60.
Yeah.
So these guys are on salaries that are funded by us, the workers, and they want to bring out a law that doesn't apply to them because they can still access their pensions right now at the age of 60, which I think if they want to do it, they should lead by example and say, we're going to work till we're 70 as well, and so should everybody else. There should be one rule for all Australians, not one for us and one for them.
Good on you, Tazzo.
Thanks, Tazzo.
Well said.
Let's go to Morfordvale. G'day, Scott.
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen. How are we?
What do you think?
Oh, mate, I'm a bit of an investor in the superannuation field. So I think that, you know, outside of if you haven't invested in superannuation from a youngster, well, you're going to be behind the eight ball to start with. But number two, if the government is going to increase the age of retirement, well, why can't they increase the provisional super that we that an employer pays? So that's going to even out the old age pension and eventually abolish it.
What? So what, the employer should pay more or the employee should sacrifice a bit?
Well, both. Bit of both, mate.
Okay, we'll make it harder to employ people now. There's already unemployment, but get your point, absolutely. Let's go to Parafield Gardens. How are you, Tim?
Good morning, guys. I reckon it's an absolute joke. Could you imagine the guys that do the hard labour, like your brickies, your landscapers, everything, go until they're 70?
Yeah, good point, Tim.
I mean, what about your AFL umpires? Could you see them until they're 70?
KG still be umpiring.
KG still on radio. KG still on the radio.
That's right.
Well, yeah. There you go.
Nah,
good on
you,
Tim. I think Tim's right, though. People that do manual labour, their bodies...
They're going in their 50s, most of those blokes.
Let's go to Paul at Felixstowe. How are you, Paul?
Yeah, not bad, mate. How are you? Tim Rui, how are you?
Good,
yeah,
Paul.
Good. What do you think?
Mate, no way in the world, mate. These guys don't live in the real world like us construction workers.
Yep.
You know, mate, we're up at 6 and we get home when it's dark.
Yeah. What do you do on the site, Paul?
Me, I'm an electrician, mate.
Yeah. Well, as our previous caller Tim said, I mean, you would know a lot of tradies, and their bodies are bruised and battered, aren't they, by the time they're in their 60s?
Oh, yeah, mate. Mm. How can I enjoy my Porsche at 65 or 70?
No, it's not fair, Paul, is it? You can't get down to get into it.
I'm not going to get the pension, you know?
Yeah.
You know, before this means test at the end of the day, so what's the difference?
Yeah. All right, we got your point, Paul.
I thought Tazzo was magnificent. Do you like him to go to the footy?
Yeah, give it to Tazzo.
Tazzo from Waverley. Well done, mate. You're off to see the Crows and St Kilda Friday night. The game starts at 7:20. Get your tickets now at afc.com.au.
Ruined Dits for Breakfast. 104.7 Triple M.
8:27, Ruined Dits for Breakfast on this Monday morning. Top of 18 today. It's rocketed up to 6.5. Afternoon showers. All thanks to Adelaide Tools this morning.
Yeah, it was a bit chilly down at Caninia Park on Friday night. If you were Crows fans anyway, you would have been very, very, very disappointed with how they went about their business down there. They should have been absolutely flogged in the first half. They looked very ordinary. They didn't look tough enough. It was very frustrating.
You said
to watch.
This morning they were soft.
They looked very soft. They played soft.
They're not a soft team, surely.
They played soft on the night. They were beaten in contested ball 164 to 130. And when you get beaten by that much in contested ball, you're either playing against better opponents and having a bad day. And that's probably what they were doing. Dangerfield and Selwood were very, very good. And our blokes weren't good enough in the clinches. And when our midfield, the Adelaide Crows midfield, get beaten, their forward line don't come into it. Their outside players don't come into it, whether it's Cameron, Atkins, McKay, Miller, they don't see much of the ball. And then all of a sudden the back line are under pressure and they don't look like as solid as what they can when the midfield are doing their job. So a very, very common theme at the moment. If you can out-muscle the Crows midfield, you're half a chance. And they start with Rory Sloan, and they put Scott Selwood on him and Mark Blixarves. They were both rotating on him. Sloaney tried very, very manfully,
but didn't have much impact on the game at all. And a lot of blokes just had ordinary nights. They shut down Laird and Smith down back, and the Crows lost their run from defence. So you'd have to say Geelong played as good a game as I think they've played for a while, and they've played pretty well the last few weeks. I thought they were excellent. But the Crows, again, against Geelong, have failed to get the job done. I was hoping that they might be able to turn the tables on them. And as I said last week, if they could do that, I think their odds for the flag would have shortened. As it turned out, we didn't see anything different at all, and their odds have probably gone out. I think there's a lot of people with a lot of question marks on the Crows now against in certain situations when sides try and shut them down and don't allow them to run.
Obviously, North Melbourne, Melbourne and Geelong have all done something to the Crows, haven't they?
Yeah. And
they've worked out a way.
And they had a couple of big wins against Brisbane and Freo in between. You've got to be careful what you read into those sort of sides, those sort of wins, but very, very disappointed. Now, people were frustrated. People were angry, and you know, quite rightly so. But KG, he had a very big statement that he went with on the weekend on Dead Set Legends.
Look, I love Tex, but I'll say this: I'm questioning whether he should be our captain. To be quite frank with you, yeah. I think Rory Sloan is the barometer. Rory Sloan, when he does a Sherwood, things like Sherwood does, which Tex is not doing. And I just wonder also whether it's time that Tex went back to the SNFL and got things right.
That's a big thing to say.
He thought about what he was saying there too, KG, and he's seen a lot of football over the years. And I know at some stage he likes to make statements on radio to get people fired up, but you don't make statements about the captain of the Crows unless you truly believe it.
Look, Tex is the obvious captain, surely.
Oh, look, Rory Sloan could be captain, but Tex has been a very good captain since he's taken over, and I think that was a silly comment for KG. I understand he can say what he wants, he believes in what he wants, and there might be some people out there who agree with him, but Tex has been a very good captain. He's done a very good job since he's been there, so I think he's wrong in that. And saying he should be going back to the SNFL, look, that's wrong as well. I mean, he's kicked plenty of goals this year. He's played some great games. He's had, the last few weeks, he's had a few ordinary games. There's no doubt the first half on the weekend, he gave away a couple of free kicks and was trying to body and didn't play that well. But if he'd kicked straight, he would have kicked five on the weekend. Now, just because he didn't kick straight doesn't mean he had a bad game. It wasn't a great game by him. He hasn't been shooting the lights out the last month, but there's a few players in that category at the moment. So I don't know. I found that a bit over the top.
Bit harsh.
Cage. He mustn't have been too upset about it because he backed it up against Sunday again on the Dead Set Legends on Sunday. So he's quite comfortable with it good luck to him if that's what he believes. But I'll back in the captain, Tex.
Yep.
I'll back him in to get out of a little bit of a form slump that he's in. But it's not just one man, and it's not just Rory Sloan. There was probably 10 or 12 blokes on the weekend that didn't play to the standard that they need to beat a top side down at Cadinia Park.
Someone here at Triple M tried to tell me over the weekend that Tex is playing injured. Now, this has been spoken about before. Tex is here tomorrow. And we'll put it to him. But
he's not injured. We know he's not injured.
As you said, he's played some good games this year, and he's had some quiet ones.
When the side's not going well, everyone looks ordinary, don't they?
Yeah.
So, look, having said all that, they're still second on the ladder, but the last 5 weeks has been pretty ordinary. I mean, the Freo first half was fantastic, but it was against the Freo side that didn't rock up. Brisbane are Brisbane. So they need to snap out of the rut they're in, otherwise they're going to slip down the ladder pretty quick.
Ruined It's for Breakfast on 104.7 Triple M.
8:12, Ruined It's for Breakfast on this Monday morning, thanks to Adelaide Tools and their end of financial year sale. Rue, the Manchester situation of a week ago and now London that happened yesterday, we woke up to. I don't know, Rue, I said to you earlier this morning, I worry about our kids, our grandkids, in that my parents, I remember talking to them a lot about the war because I was fascinated by it.
I'm fascinated by it.
And you hear things about Kokoda Trail, parts of our history, and that was World War II, World War I, World War II, and our parents lived through the Depression and how tough it was, how hard it was.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing about it, Roo, is they always knew who the enemy was. We knew we were fighting, there was the Allies versus Germany and Japan, and we knew who we were fighting, as bad as it was.
Mm.
Right now, we've got no idea who we're fighting. They've infiltrated our cities, our suburbs. We had a young girl arrested here in Adelaide last week, and that's actually how I feel about it, in that they will, a lot of them have flown overseas. We read about people that fly to Syria to get trained, and then they come back and live here. We worry about some of the refugees that have come here. We don't think they're, legitimate refugees. We think, you know, some of them may be terrorists.
Yep.
I just get the feeling we don't actually know in this day and age who we're fighting and who the enemy are, and it's worrying.
No, of course you don't, because it's, people are everywhere. The world's not, you know, really, everyone lives everywhere now, don't they? And they travel everywhere, especially over in Europe, because there's no borders in most of the place. No. They don't even know who's living in the populations because they lost control of it. So, no, it's very scary, there's no doubt. And when things like what happened in London happen, when, blokes are so crazy or committed to their cause, however you want to describe it, that they'll go around and just stab random people and slit their throats with 30-centimetre long blades on their knives, like big knives. It's just stuff you see in bloody video games,
crazy
or movies or something.
And a car ploughs into people as well. Let's hear from our UK correspondent, Gavin Gray.
There have been 12 people arrested in Barking. Now, that's in East London. There has been raided. It was said there was a controlled explosion there. The apartment that's been raided is thought to be a flat belonging to one of the three attackers. Now, among the 12 arrested are people that were said to be there. And among the 12 are four women. So that's the latest from the police. We still know that 36 people are in hospital, 5 London hospitals, 21 are in a critical condition. And, of course, that is deeply worrying. We've also been told, Roondits, that 50 bullets were fired by the police. And they managed to stop the attackers within 8 or 9 minutes of the first call. But they were wearing mock suicide explosive vests. And that's why some people were reluctant to tackle them. But there's been the most amazing stories of heroism. People throwing chairs at them, glasses at them in order to try and prevent them. People stepping in as they were stabbing people. And the most, you know, horrendous eyewitness accounts.
There you go. Gavin Gray, our UK correspondent. The good news is that overnight in Manchester, the Ariana Grande concert that she put together went ahead, Roo.
Yeah, that a huge crowd went off incident-free, and it's going to raise a huge amount of money. So that was very, very brave in itself to, you know, to continue on with it, really. To go to it, you would have thought it was probably a bit more of a risk of something happening again there. And
if my teenage son or daughter came to me and said, I'm going to that concert, I'd be very, very worried.
Yeah, you would have been. You just would have thought it was an unnecessary risk going along. But
so well done to all those people.
Got away with that. Yeah.
Now,
is good.
Three Australians have been involved in this. One girl, can you believe this, a young lady from Brisbane, had a man come up behind her, grab her hair and pull her head backwards and slit her throat.
Oh, I just can't even
horrific
get my
stuff.
Head around it.
And then there's this young man from Darwin, Adam Morrison.
Walked outside, walked across the road, a fight breaks out. I'm like, what's going on here?
Start to walk towards it. All of a sudden, the guy comes up with a knife, and I'm like this, ducks it, stabs me there, and I just like push him off. Blood's going everywhere. I walk into a pub, and I'm like, someone help me. I've just been stabbed.
Andrew Morrison. Now, stabbed in the neck he was.
Gee,
incredible. Now, he's on his way home. He's flying back now. Roo, it got us thinking earlier this morning. We had a discussion. How equipped, how prepared are we? Now, we're not trying to be dramatic here and overplay this incident, but I think it's true. There is an ever-present danger now in every city in the world where we know there's a Muslim population and possibly some sort of terrorist cell in operation. We've already mentioned we had a young girl here, rightly or wrongly, arrested last week in our western suburbs.
Yep.
So we know they're everywhere. We know the Lindt Cafe situation happened.
Mm.
And we, the coroner was very, very critical of how that unfolded and how police handled it.
Yep.
So we wanted to know this morning, we spoke to our police minister here in South Australia, Peter Malinauskas. Do you constantly talk about these situations?
Absolutely, on a regular basis. So we have an emergency management committee of cabinet, and within that committee, we have the responsibility for all emergency action plans that exist throughout the state for a whole range of different emergencies. And terrorism is one that naturally gets regularly discussed, particularly in light of the fact that we are operating in a different climate to what was the case 20 years ago. And currently in Australia, we do have a national terrorism threat level of probable. So that means we have to be vigilant and prepared just in case something does go wrong.
Overnight, we know that in London, they just shot the three terrorists point blank. They just came in and with 8 minutes they were shot. We know that in Sydney, the police waited many, many hours before they stormed the building. That was one thing. But the other thing that came up is that the chief negotiator for the police in Sydney had never actually done that job before. I worry about those sorts of things and about that sort of inexperience here in Australia.
Well, look, our police officers are trained to deal with a whole range of different circumstances, and thankfully, Link Cafe sieges don't happen very often, so it's hard for someone to be able to claim experience
within
a situation when they occur so irregularly. What's critical is they train for every circumstance. Our security forces are out there working with other federal government agencies, contemplating every single circumstance, everything that could go wrong. They've got an action plan in place for almost any problem. So I think we can take a lot of confidence that they're prepared and trained to deal with whatever circumstance may arise.
That was good to know that they have been organised, and I thought they would be, but, you know, once you when that happens, it'll be a different kettle of fish anyway because the pressure's on, and let's hope they don't ever have to deal with it, but if they do, let's hope they do a good job.
Look, I don't want to incite anything here and turn us into a frenzy, crazy society, but are you worried about Thursday night, the Socceroos at Adelaide Oval, Friday night, 50,000 people, Crow St Kilda?
No, I'd like to think Adelaide Oval are well and truly organised. I think, as we've said many times, they've been identified as one of the risks in Australia, and I'd be shocked if we aren't ready to handle anything that they're prepared to throw. There's not, you can't 100% proof it anyway, Ditz, can you? But
no.
I'm sure they're ready to do everything they can.
Mm. All right, that's our take on it this morning. It's Ruined Ditz on Triple M.
Ruined Ditz for breakfast. 104.7 Triple M.
Rue, these segments are becoming very popular on a Saturday, aren't they?
Oh, if you love a laugh, well, you got to listen to Triple M on Saturday afternoons when James Brayshaw, Damien Barrett, Wayne Carey and Brian Taylor dig up some gold from Brian Taylor's history. Here's another interview from his early days.
So we've had George Foreman a couple of times. We've had Nadia Comaneci.
Comaneci.
Yep, we've had some really big names.
Yeah, we have. So, which gets us to this man, who none of us have heard of. His name's Dar Davies. Apparently, he's a motorbike stunt rider who was getting ready to perform at the Melbourne Royal Show. Oh, anyway, here is Brian with Dar Davies.
Welcome back to 3Z The Good Sports. Australia's internationally known stunt entertainer, Dar Davies, will make, would you believe, 13 appearances as a feature attraction at this year's Royal Melbourne Show. Dar is on the line now. Let's start again. Let's go again. Dar Davies in 5 seconds. 1, 2, 3, 4. Welcome back to 3Z The Good Sports. Well, coming up shortly in the month of September, in fact, the Royal Melbourne Show begins. One of the feature attractions at this year's Royal Melbourne Show will be stunt performer Dar Davies. Dar joins us on the line now. Good morning to you, Dar.
Morning, Brian.
How are you today?
Thank you.
What about the situation with the... Hell, are you still there, Dar?
Yeah,
the situation with the jumping side of things, what can we, if conditions are right and once you've had a look at the situation, if you do decide to jump, what can we expect to jump over and what sort of distances are we talking and what sort of a motorcycle are we using?
Well, for one, we're not doing bike jumping down here.
What about the high wire then? What sort of dangers are involved in that?
Well, if you slip off the high wire actually breaks, you'll go to the ground and you'd just about kill yourself for sure.
Well, that's let's hope that you don't fall off. Dar, what makes someone like yourself want to cross a high wire on a motorcycle and knowing that if something did go wrong, it's a crash to the ground and either very serious injury or death? What makes you want to do that?
I don't know. I honestly don't have an answer for you there.
Well, very interesting situation indeed. Dar, appreciate your time on The Good Sports this morning.
Thanks a lot, Brian.
No.
Come on, Dar, give me something.
He's gone with the three questions. That's and it. He wasn't doing any of that.
It was a great big long lead into what sort of bike are you on? How far are you jumping? Dar gives it the not doing any bike jumping.
You imbecile, Dar.
What about the other line? Yeah, let's hope you don't fall off.
That's it.
Oh, and 1991, young. Early in the morning.
One thing you have perfected is the.
What I loved, and if beautiful Hose Mary didn't have enough to do, I'd ask her to dig it back up for me. His first response: "Hello, Brian." So we moved from the little or basically completely unknown Dar Davies to the fastest man on earth. Well, one of them, Carl Lewis and Leroy Burrell, at the time, early 90s, were the two fastest men over 100 metres in the world.
Leroy Burrell in 5 seconds. One, two, three, four. Welcome back to 3Z, the good sports. Well, certainly we saw part of a great sporting moment the other day, the 100 metre sprint. We saw a world record, and we saw, I think, five or six runners run under 10 seconds. One of the truly great sporting moments in the history of sport, and especially track and field athletics, if you know what I mean. It's on the line now, one of the guys that was competing in that event, in fact, one of the favourites, the guy eventually ran second, Leroy Burrell. Good morning to you, Leroy.
Good morning.
Were you disappointed in your run, Leroy?
How could I be?
Where do you think that you could perhaps improve on that run?
Definitely at the end. I didn't stay as relaxed as I wanted to.
Well, that's obviously... Well, Leroy, you would have looked at this event as being your most important race of your career so far. Did you feel a great deal of extra pressure because of that?
No.
I don't know how to put it. I mean, I find it sort of hard to believe, even though in a way, if you know what I mean, I do believe it. But yourself and Carl Lewis must in some way be, I don't know how to put it, in some way sort of fight within yourselves, not verbally, but just mentally in your own bodies and say, gee, you know, I just desperately want to beat that guy and how can I beat him? I mean, you seem to have such a good friendship.
Well, I don't know why you find it so hard to believe.
Okay, we've been speaking with the former world record holder of the 100 metre sprint, number one ranked sprinter in the world, Leroy Burrell, and he has just won silver at the world championships, and I have no doubt that he will become the next Carl Lewis of track and fields. Leroy, appreciate your time once again here, and best of luck with the relay on Sunday.
Okay, thank you.
Oh, no!
So he called him Leroy at the end, but Larry for Larry. The
rest. You branded him Larry.
Larry.
My favourite bit is, I don't know how to believe it. Been in a way I do believe it, but I don't know how to believe it.
Last week he told Carl Lewis, we heard that he told Carl Lewis that he was going to make him famous here in Australia because that goes Australia-wide, this show. And then this week calls Leroy, Larry.
Larry.
Three times.
Gave him the Larry.
You know, the theme of every interview, JB, the theme of every single interview is because of these long-winded sort of real attacks. The answers are just blunt and short. They basically do not want to speak to him at all.
I've worn them out before I get there.
They say to themselves, get me off here.
Who the hell's this peanut? where are you from?
There you go, Brock Taylor.
The art of interviewing.
Oh, lovely stuff. Brilliant stuff.
Don't miss a minute of Ruined Dits for Breakfast on the Catch Up podcast. For Adelaide Tools, with 5 locations, Paraka, Lonsdale, St Mary's, Gawler and Mile End.
Or go online at adelaidetools.com.au.